Welcome to the Silver Screen Podcast. I'm Jared Boomer.
And I'm Katie Gainey West. This is a podcast about movies and pop culture.
And today we are discussing Amsterdam, not the city, which you were in recently.
Yes!
But the movie with Christian Bale, Margot Robbie, John David Washington, directed by David O. Russell. There's lots of other people in this film as well. So we're going to talk about that today. Kind of a box office bomb, which is interesting. We'll get into that a little bit more as the episode goes on. But we wanted to start, of course, by dedicating this episode to Angela Lansbury, who unfortunately passed away this past week when we were recording at the age of 96. She was about to turn 97. And Katie, you've obviously talked about her on the show before a ton. I would say she's probably one of your favorite celebrities.
Absolutely.
You have a photograph that was signed by her. So
yes.
This was some sad news earlier this week when she did pass away. But she had a great life.
She really did. And Jared is such a good friend to everyone because he always rolls with it when I'm like, can we talk about this person? And can we not mention this because this person sucks? And he just rolls with it. He's a real friend. But yes, I was in dire straits at the beginning of the week, Jared. Also, Jared was the first person to text me, which was so sweet. And then my best friend Kylie also texted me shortly after because she is also obsessed with Angela Lansbury. And she got me, I have a Cabot Cove sweatshirt that is my favorite sweatshirt. And Kylie got that for me for my birthday, I think last year. So anyway, I was devastated. I was at work and I actually did go to the bathroom to cry. And I put a sign on my desk that says, I'm in mourning because Angela Lansbury died. Thank you. That's all. And it's gotten some attention this week at work. But all the people there know me. It's a smaller company. So please don't think it's like corporate America where that would be weird. Anyway, I wanted to share a tiny bit about her life. I did do quite a bit of research, but I knew a lot of this. But I think that she's someone that you might know her or you might not know why you know her. But she had a career of over 7 decades and got a lot of notoriety, but she was never like a leading lady because of her looks, really. And I think she was beautiful. But, you know, it'd be like looking at someone now that we would consider more of a character actress. And I feel like Hollywood wasn't very fair to her, but she made quite a career from humble beginnings. So anyway, Angela Lansbury was born in London in 1925. Her career was over 7 decades. And some of the films you might know her from are Gaslight, National Velvet, The Picture of Dorian Gray, The Manchurian Candidate, the original one, Beauty and the Beast, where she voiced Mrs. Potts, Bedknobs and Broomsticks, Anastasia, where she voiced the grandmother, and Mary Poppins Returns. She was nominated for an Oscar in her very first ever film role in 1994's Gaslight. She was 19, I think, when the Oscars actually like came around. And that is similar to Audrey Hepburn, who I've talked about, who was also nominated for her first film for an Oscar, but Audrey won. Over the span of her career, Angela was nominated for 18 Emmys, but never won, which is horribly unfair. She was also nominated for 3 Oscars and never won. The Emmy was the only thing she needed for an EGOT, though, because she was given an honorary Oscar in 2013. She was married to Peter Shaw for 53 years, and they had 2 children together. And one thing that I really admired about her, I knew this long before I read about this this week, but when she was getting really famous on Broadway, she'd moved to Broadway, her children both were struggling with drug addiction. So she left Broadway at the height of her career and moved her family to Ireland so she could prioritize her children and help them get sober because her mother was from Ireland. So anyway, I then found out this I didn't know, Jared. I was spooked. Her daughter, who was like into drugs and everything, was actually part of the Manson crowd at the time. And she left, like they went to Ireland shortly.
That's kinda wild.
Like shortly before the murders took place. So, because Angela even talked about it in an interview, like how freaky that was. But the great news is both of her kids recovered and they're doing great. One of her children, I think it's her daughter, has a restaurant in Los Angeles too. And I also thought it was neat. Her kids are 69 and 70. So they got 7 decades with their mom. Like that's, most people do not get that. Usually we get, sadly, like 40, 50 years with our parents. They got 70 years with their mom, which is cool. Anyway, She was also she called herself a Democrat from the ground up. That's a quote. And she supported a lot of charities that helped with domestic abuse, rehabilitation for drug users, and to support the fight against HIV/AIDS. And then her talents spanned various generations and medias as she moved from Broadway. She ended up winning 5 Tonys. That's where she got her accolades for MAME, Dear World. Yeah. Sweeney Todd, The Demon Barber of Fleet Street, which if you all knew, that was on Broadway before it was a movie. And she won her last Tony at the age of 83 for her role in Blythe Spirit. And it was her role as Jessica Fletcher in Murder, She Wrote that made her a household name. Even with all the other things she'd done, a lot of people did not know her until Murder, She Wrote. The show ended up lasting 12 seasons from 1984 to 1996. And to my extreme dismay, Jared, I knew this, but I'm so upset to admit it. It went off the air because of the popularity of Friends. That is the most devastating news for me, especially since Friends is probably my favorite show of all time. But it's like, it's so upsetting to me because when people say my favorite shows, I say Friends, Murder, She Wrote, and Sex and the City. So it's very upsetting to me. But anyway. Lastly, in 1994, she was appointed a commander of the Order of the British Empire by Queen Elizabeth II and made a dame. I also thought that was weird since Queen Elizabeth just passed away. It's just a freaky coincidence. Mm-hmm. And then yeah. This is going to make me cry, Jared, when we see it. Her last role, she is going to make an appearance in Glass Onion, A Knives Out Mystery on Netflix. Oh, I'll be okay. And then, but she was just... overall, a class act, an exceptionally talented actor, and she had a huge impact on my life. She's easily one of the most impactful celebrities I have ever loved, and she will be very missed. So hopefully that teaches everybody a little bit about Angela Lansbury if you didn't know, but I wanted you to know why I admired her so much, and she lived a very full, beautiful life. I was just sad because like Betty White, I wanted her to live forever, but especially until her 100th birthday.
And really interesting, too, that she started her career in film and then kind of went to Broadway for quite a
yes.
while. And then also did a TV show that was insanely popular mm-hmm. and then more movies. So she really was like in all facets of entertainment, really, except music. But like, you know, TV, Broadway and yeah. movies, she was involved in all of those, which is rare to see nowadays that somebody would do like all three and have success
absolutely.
In all three. Yeah.
And she was a fantastic singer, mm-hmm. too. Like,
yeah.
Beauty and the Beast won, you know, and they had the song where she sings it, Tale as Old as Time. And all of her stuff on Broadway, her voice, too, it lasted. Because, you know, with age, your voice changes and all that. But then the other weird fact that I read, I didn't know this. She was the favored to win the Oscar for The Manchurian Candidate. She plays the crazy mother in it. And I admit, I have not seen the original, and I need to. So that's high on my list now. But she lost to Patty Duke for The Miracle Worker, which was about, oh my gosh, why can't I think of Helen Keller and her and working with Helen Keller. But Patty Duke is actually Sean Astin's mom. If you know Sean Astin mm-hmm. from Lord of the Rings, playing Samwise Gamgee, that's his mom. So his mom was the one that won the Oscar over Angela Lansbury, because that was the one that everybody thought she's going to win for this. And then lastly, a lot of people responded to my devastating Instagram story, because I was just like, my life's over. This is the worst day of my life. But a lot of people love Beauty and the Beast, but I got a lot of people talking about Bedknobs and Broomsticks too. And the good news is, if you love any of those, they're on Disney Plus right now. And then I personally, Anastasia is one of my favorite animated films of all time, but it's not a Disney movie. So it's not there. It's actually was done by Fox. But anyway, just, I love her so much. And thank you, Jared, for letting us do this for her.
So rest in peace, Angela Lansbury, again, passing away at the age of 96. On to news now. We have some news about Devil in the White City. This is a miniseries that has been in the works longer than this podcast has existed. And we talked about
yep.
this when this podcast started, and it's still not done yet. It's based on a book, and recently Keanu Reeves and the director, Todd Field, backed out of the miniseries. No reason was given, but... if you don't know, Leo, basically him and his production company, whatever, producers, bought the rights to this book and wanted to adapt it. And I think first it was going to be a movie, and then they decided it was going to be a miniseries. And Scorsese was involved at one point, I think, and then backed out. So this has been through a lot of like revisions.
Yes. Yes, it really has. And I kind of just want it to be made because I think it's going to be such an interesting miniseries. I like the choice, too, that they're doing a miniseries. And the book was so good. And it's just creepy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we'll see what happens with that. Also, another movie that got delayed is a couple Marvel movies got pushed back. So those will come out a little bit. Those aren't coming out for a couple years anyway, but they got moved. So they'll be out later. Also, if you were interested in the Blade movie from Marvel, that had a big kind of same thing happened to that happened to this miniseries where like the director was fired. They're rewriting the script.
Dang.
Mahershala Ali isn't sure if he's going to like stay on the project or not because it's been in development for so long. So that is long down the road. And then our other news item involves this movie, Amsterdam. And this movie was kind of a box office bomb. So Estimates, there's a couple articles out. I found one from The Hollywood Reporter that said the budget for this was around $80 million. And then, of course, that's just the budget. You've got to factor in marketing and, you know, TV commercials and all that stuff, which is probably another $60 million, I think, is what they estimated it at. So about $140 million movie when you're all said and done. And it has not made that much at the box office. The official total when we did the notes here just a little while ago was it's only about $10-11 million worldwide. So that's a big loss for this movie with a ton of big stars in it. So
well, and I don't always think about this, but I definitely noticed with the cast in this movie, I was typing all the supporting cast and the list went on and on and on and on. And I even thought when I was doing that, how much money went to just paying the actors.
Yeah.
Even if it was someone like Taylor Swift for a rather short appearance, but she was fully acting and in multiple scenes. Like I wonder how much she got paid for this.
Well, and like, you know, De Niro's in this, he's not gonna work cheap. So
And his part, then people like Margot Robbie are getting so popular and so famous that even that I bet she commands a pretty steep price as well.
So we'll talk more about Amsterdam here in just a minute. We do have Corrections Corner for some things from last episode. Apparently Dua Lipa and Trevor Noah are not dating. At least that's what they've come out and said since our last episode. They addressed the rumors that they were dating. They said, no, it was just two friends going to get dinner. Okay, sure. If that's what you want to call it, I guess, you know,
whatever. I get dinner with friends.
Yeah, I get dinner with friends too, but I don't know if I like, you know, kiss them after the dinner like they did. So that was the part where it was like, okay, is it just dinner? So, but they're apparently not in a relationship. And then also on our last episode, we were talking about the Grand Budapest Hotel from Wes Anderson, and you said the Great Budapest Hotel.
I did.
Which is kind of the same thing. So
I know, but I always try to listen. Jared and I both listen to the episodes because he edits them and then I check them, which I've mentioned this before. But I was listening and I was like yelling at myself in the car and I was like, no, that sounds so stupid. You sound like you don't know the movie. So I don't know if anybody else caught it, but I was like, I've got to correct it. I want them to know that I know this movie because I like that movie so much.
So we have some recommendations now. I don't really have any recommends. I do have one thing that was interesting. A couple weeks ago, John Oliver, Last Week Tonight, did a piece, which I brought up before. This one was on museums, though, and how a lot of stuff in museums, especially the British Museum, it does not belong to them. Like they stole it from other countries, or when they were like at war with these countries, they just like took artifacts and relics and things, and they're now in the British Museum and they won't give them back. So that was kind of what the whole story was about, which was very interesting. It's a longer piece from him, but again, I really like how he will tackle topics that are just, you know, not heavily discussed sometimes. Now, sometimes he will do a topic that's like, you know, COVID or inflation or something that's affecting everybody. But the museums thing was really interesting. A lot of like history involved there. So if you want to learn more about that, and I've been to the British Museum, so it was interesting to learn that most of the stuff in there doesn't belong to them and was, you know, stolen or taken or, you know, something like that. So
well, and John Oliver really has an impact because I don't know if you've seen it, Jared, but I've seen at least on Instagram multiple stories this week about people getting artifacts back, different countries and stuff, because museums are like, this doesn't belong to us. We need to give it back to you. And I don't know 100% that that came from the John Oliver piece, but he does. I love him. I think he is one of the best people we have out there. He's spreading the truth and doing the Lord's work is what I like to say about him and Colbert. So I'm going to watch that. I had that saved in my queue because I try to watch every episode of John Oliver. But how interesting. And I saw that too. And then I did want to recommend, I have been such a bad reader this month and last month. I'm embarrassed for myself, quite honestly. But I finished a book and had to talk about it. I read 1,000 Splendid Sons by Khaled Hosseini. And this book is not new. I don't know when it came out, but it's years old because I read The Kite Runner last year, and that was my number one book of the whole year, of all 100 books. This book is definitely a contender for the top right now, in my opinion. And I think I'm on 78 books. But it was so good. And this one, The Kite Runner, was mainly about men in Afghanistan and other places, but like a male experience. 1,000 Splendid Sons was about women. And it definitely made me never want a vacation in Afghanistan. But it was fascinating to learn about that culture. And I really encourage people, if you're ever maybe not interested in going to the Middle East, but you'd like to learn about them, he writes in just a beautiful, clear way that's easy to understand and gives you a good like experience, like awareness of the culture without having to go there, I guess. But it was fantastic. And then I've been really branching out with podcasts, which I'm proud of. I've listened to Pod Save America for a long time, but recently I've been listening to it more frequently. But if you want help preparing for the midterm elections, they're on November 8th, but they're doing episodes about they're talking a little about the January 6th stuff, but for the most part, they're actually trying to talk about here's other things going on in the world. And if you have questions about the midterm. So again, that's a great podcast, Pod Save America. And then don't forget to vote on November 8th. And then if you love Angela Lansbury, like I do, there was a 13-minute video on NewYorkTimes.com this week that was excellent. It's called The Last Word. And I knew a lot of the information I shared with you all, but it was nice to fact check. But there's an interview with her for it's 13 minutes long. It's called The Last Word. And specifically, they did that and she said it could be released upon her death. So she talks about her life, but then also like the legacy she wanted to leave. And it was a great, great interview. So if you have 13 minutes, I strongly encourage you to go to New York Times and watch that. Again, it's called The Last Word.
Nice. Very nice. And you brought up a book and that made me think of one more recommend. So Frederick Bachman has a new book out. It's called The Winners. I haven't read it yet, but it's part of his Beartown series. And I have read the first one and I'm reading the second one right now. So it's a trilogy. This is the last book in the trilogy. And it's about a small community that's surrounding a hockey team in that community. So the first book is really good. I can't give my thoughts on the second book yet because I'm about a third of the way done with it. But the third one just came out. So if you're interested in reading that series, definitely obviously start with the first one because it's not really going to make a lot of sense if you just pick up the third one and try to start with that. But the first one's really good. And I was at Target the other day and I saw that he had a new book out and I was like, oh, this is the conclusion of that trilogy. So
awesome.
There you go. There's another recommend. So we will now talk about Amsterdam, released on October 7th of 2022. So this movie was originally supposed to be released later, and then they moved it up. I think they kind of knew what they had and knew that it probably wasn't going to be a huge Oscar contender and just wanted to release it before all the big Oscar movies got in theaters. So they just kind of dumped it at the beginning of October. It's rated R for brief violence and bloody images. Does have a little language as well, but not too bad. Runtime is 2 hours and 14 minutes. IMDb is a 6.2 out of 10. And then Rotten Tomatoes, critics 32%, audience 59%. So neither group really liking this. Critics really not liking it. I don't think it was as bad as a 32.
No.
I think anytime you get this assembly of actors together, you're going to have at least a movie in the 50s or 60s, which is kind of what the audience is agreeing with and the IMDb score. So we'll obviously give our scores at the end too. But then box office wise, it's been a flop. Domestically, it's made $7 million. Worldwide, it's made $10 million. And a synopsis for this movie: in the 1930s, three friends witness a murder, are framed for it, and uncover one of the most outrageous plots in American history. I will say the trailers for this movie did not really do a good job of telling you what the movie was about. I don't know if you got that same vibe from the trailers, but when I first saw the trailer for this, I was like, oh, cool. Margot Robbie, Christian Bale, John David Washington in a movie together, but I don't really know what this is about.
I couldn't agree more. And actually, until about halfway through the film, I still wasn't sure.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that as a slight, but since we're going to talk about it anyway, this movie, in a way, it has to do with like leading up to World War II and talking about Hitler and like what his premise was. What an idiot. Honestly, I'm glad he's dead. but I felt like halfway through we kind of got that this might be based on a real story, but I'm still not sure. But I definitely, from the advertisements, had no idea what this was going to be about. It just had people I liked in it, so I was like, yeah, I'll go see it.
Yeah, it really kind of switches, like you said, halfway through, where the first part is like kind of just this friend group coming together of Christian Bale, Margot Robbie, and John David Washington. And then the second half of the movie is kind of getting into like this investigation, trying to catch these people. So it's kind of all over the place in terms of its
yes.
plot, which we'll talk about here in a few minutes. We have some critics' reviews for this movie. First up is Christy Lehmeyer of RogerEbert.com, who says, simultaneously overstuffed and undernourished, frantic and meandering, Amsterdam is one big star-studded hot mess of a movie. So
yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. Next up is Neil Manow of Movie Mom, who says David O. Russell's new film Amsterdam has a powerhouse cast, a wisp of a true story, and a wildly uneven and overly complicated script. The results are therefore messy and mixed. And then finally, we have Jesse Thompson of The Independent in the UK, who says the central performances are charming and stretches of the film are enjoyable. Everything looks stylish and wonderful and everyone has nice hair. The thing is, there's a great film in here fighting to get out, but it's drowned out by manic plotting.
I did like the call out to the hair because I also thought the hair was fabulous, especially Taylor Swift and Margot Robbie. I was like, I want to get my hair to look exactly like Margot Robbie's in this movie.
Also, every time we quote The Independent, I think of that critic in Ted Lasso, Trent Krim or whatever.
Yes. The Independent.
Yes. So
he's so good at that role. That actor is great.
He is. There's your Ted Lasso talk. This movie is directed by David O. Russell. He's done a lot of movies. He's had a lot of issues as well. This has been interesting, especially some more issues have come to light. And, you know, we talked about a few weeks ago, and Olivia Wilde talked about in her interview with Stephen Colbert that female directors are usually held to a higher standard than male directors. And that's definitely true in this particular case with David O. Russell, because this story has not been as front and center as the Darling drama, but this was an article you found on WashingtonPost.com, and mm-hmm. it's called David O. Russell is the Latest Face of Hollywood's Workplace Abuse Problem by Sonia Rao. And the beginning of the article says, last month, amid the hubbub over rumored drama behind the scenes of Don't Worry, Darling, director Olivia Wilde noted that male filmmakers are held to very different standards from their female counterparts. Men are, quote, praised for being tyrannical, she said on a late night talk show, adding that their behavior can be repeatedly called into question and, quote, it still doesn't overtake conversations of their actual talent or about the films themselves. Rather than listing David O. Russell's accomplishments, we obviously want to talk about some of his controversies. He's known to be very physically and verbally abusive on movie sets. This has come from numerous mm-hmm. people that have worked with him. Christopher Nolan, George Clooney, Amy Adams has said, I forget if it was on the set of American Hustle or The Fighter.
It was Hustle.
Her got into a verbal altercation. So he's very hard to work with. He's also been accused of sexually assaulting his niece mm-hmm. and all but owned up to it and faced like zero consequences. So he's had a lot of issues, and a lot of people too are saying, with this movie being how poorly it performed at the box office, this could be maybe the end for David O. Russell. Maybe he gets one more chance, but he's had two now with this and Joy with Jennifer Lawrence that didn't do particularly great. And these are high budget movies, high budget stars, and they haven't really performed very well. So his like directing career could be coming to an end. I think I like some of his movies that he's done. I particularly think The Fighter with Mark Wahlberg and Christian Bale and Amy Adams is a really good movie. We both enjoyed Silver Linings Playbook and American Hustle, but it seems like he's definitely had some problems in while he's been directing. So
yeah, and the niece thing I wanted to say. So what I understand is his niece is transgender, which mm-hmm. doesn't really affect the story. It's just like, it's problematic either way that he was okay touching her inappropriately. And in the article too, it's he has admitted like, yeah, I did that, but I didn't mean anything by it and nothing happened. And I just think, I mean, that's borderline pedophilia depending on the age. And I don't get also if there's this much with people like George Clooney and Christopher Nolan, they're like powerhouse people. They're important in Hollywood. For them to have physical fights with him and then nothing happens is bizarre to me. And I'm not going to die on the hill of like trying to save Olivia Wilde, but I do think she was right. And I kept thinking that whole time before Don't Worry, Darling came out, I was like, they are treating her differently. And if I was a female director, I'd be furious too. And I don't know what happened, you know, with her and Florence, but beyond that, she wasn't treated the same way. And her movie did suffer kind of because of it. But David O. Russell, nothing happens. He sucks. But I did also, the more time has gone on, the less I like Silver Linings Playbook. It was one that I thought was like fine. And I read the book. I liked the book a lot better. But I did really like The Fighter the best and then American Hustle. So he clearly has some talent, but I think there's no place for someone who's abusive and a sexual predator to be given more projects and continue to work.
Yeah, I don't know if in Silver Linings Playbook, if he handled the mental disability part extremely well, like going back and looking at that movie and looking at Bradley Cooper's character. I don't know if that was written in the best way possible, right, to kind of address those issues that character had. And obviously Jennifer Lawrence in that one as well. So, but we should say too, Don't Worry, Darling has done much better at the box office than this movie.
True.
So
that's why I said kind of. I was like, I don't know why I'm saying it didn't fail. People didn't give it high ratings, but it's made a lot of money.
It's up to 70 million worldwide right now, which is, you know, seven times the money that this has made. So
yeah.
We'll take a quick break here on the show. We'll come back. We'll talk about the stacked cast for this movie and our likes and dislikes for Amsterdam. And we're back here on the Silver Screen Podcast talking about Amsterdam, the new David O. Russell movie. This movie has a very large cast, huge cast, probably the biggest cast of any movie this year, besides probably the new Knives Out film, Glass Onion, because that has a pretty stacked cast as well. But in the lead role of this movie is Christian Bale playing the character of Bert Bernanson.
I think it's Berenson. I think it's Berenson, but
said it
only
differently,
because
like three times throughout the movie. Yeah.
Well, also because on Homeland, if anyone loves Homeland, I was obsessed with that show when it was on, and the main character who works with Carrie was Saul Berenson. So anyway, but Christian Bale, I really debated a crush alert because I loved him in Little Women. In 94, he was easily one of my first celeb crushes of all time. He seems like kind of a loose cannon. I think he's actually mellowed out with age, but I don't really want to give him a crush alert for that reason. But I do think he's good looking and extremely talented. So Christian Bale is originally from Wales. He's best known for The Dark Knight, Batman Begins, American Psycho, Ford versus Ferrari, Vice, The Big Short, American Hustle, Newsies, Little Women, and about 100 other films. He's been nominated for 4 acting Oscars already. And in 2011, he won a Best Supporting Actor Oscar for his role in The Fighter. Next up, you can see him in The Pale Blue Eye and The Church of Living Dangerously.
I would say that Christian Bale probably has One of the best ranges of any actor that I've
absolutely
seen. Based on those roles that you've mentioned. I mean, he's done all sorts of different types of movies, and he's mm-hmm. usually pretty good in just about all of them. So I think that's mm-hmm. to be commended, is that he can, you know, he can be an American Psycho, but he can also play Batman, but he can also play, you know, being Little Woman and being Ford versus Ferrari, and all of those are completely different things. So.
Yes. And if you ask me, maybe sometime we should do this as an episode, but if people were asking who I think are truly the most, the best actors, like generation wise right now, like of our time that are alive, he is easily to me one of the best actors we have because of his range. Mm-hmm. And I think he's good in every, I really haven't seen him be bad at acting in anything. I think Timothy Chalamet is another one too, but there are people I really like as people, like Matt Damon, that I wouldn't quite say the same, but I think Christian mm-hmm. is one of the best. Then we have another person who I would argue is an excellent actress who's going to continue to get a lot more work, is Margot Robbie. Can I please have like 25 crush alerts? Thank you, Jared. Jared and I both crush hard on Margot Robbie. She's up there with Ana de Armas for me. I love her so much. I was watching the film and I turned to Arjun and I was like, I honestly think she might be one of the most beautiful people I've ever seen in my entire life. She's fabulous. And in this movie, she plays
this movie, they didn't even really like have a lot of like makeup on her or anything. It was a very kind of natural look, and she's still gorgeous. So
yeah, and she doesn't need it. She is stunning. Oh my gosh, I love her. And we're gonna rave about her when we see Babylon, so just prepare for that. But she plays Valerie Vose in this movie. I love all the alliteration with the names, by the way. She's originally from Australia and is best known for Suicide Squad, I, Tonya, Birds of Prey, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and The Wolf of Wall Street. Ooh, her and The Wolf of Wall Street, I'm sweating just thinking about it. What, she's so beautiful. Anyway, she's been nominated for 2 acting Oscars for her roles in Bombshell and I, Tonya. She has many upcoming projects. Just a few of them include Babylon, Asteroid City, Barbie, and more.
I'm excited for Barbie.
Oh my gosh, me too. I can't wait. I cannot wait. It's going to be so good. We will review that on the pod, everyone. Next up, we have John David Washington. He plays Harold Woodman. He is the son of Denzel Washington. We've talked about him before. And fun fact, I didn't know this. He used to be a professional football player. And I forget, I don't know if he went to Moorhead, but I know that he in college was, and then he was like involved in the draft, but then he decided to pursue acting. His star is very much on the rise. I don't think we've seen the last of John David Washington for a very long time. He's already starred in Tenet, Black Klansman, and Malcolm and Marie, which wasn't my favorite film, if you all remember that. And then next up, you can see him in True Love and The Piano Lesson. And then this film has, like Jared and I mentioned, an all-star cast. These are a lot of names, but all of these people are in this film. This movie also stars Andrea Riseborough, Anya Taylor-Joy, Chris Rock, Michael Shannon, Mike Myers, Taylor Swift, Timothy Olyphant, Zoe Saldana, Rami Malek, and Robert De Niro, to name just a few.
Yes, very stacked cast. So we'll get into our likes and dislikes now. I liked most of the performances in this movie. There's a few that I wasn't a huge fan of. I'll mention those in the dislikes. But it seems like you kind of liked everybody that was in this film. And we should mention, too, that if you haven't seen it, Margot Robbie, John David Washington, Christian Bale are the main three. And then these other mm-hmm. characters are kind of in cameo or smaller roles. They don't have as much screen time, but they pop up throughout the film.
Yes. You know what? There's probably one or two performances I could say something about and dislikes, but for the most part, I felt like this movie, a lot of why I wouldn't give it a 30% is because of the acting. Like, I think the acting saved a lot of it. I don't think the plot was smooth. I think there was a lot to be desired in this film, but I don't think the acting detracted from the film. If anything, it saved it. But Christian Bale and Margot Robbie, especially, they are so, and also John David Washington really added a lot to this too, but I felt like Christian and Margot were the standout roles. And I did want to compliment Taylor Swift. I'm a half Swiftie, as I've said before. I really do enjoy Taylor. I was not certain that she would be good. I kind of thought that it would just be kind of like everybody would gasp when she was on screen and they'd be so excited to see her. But I thought she did a really good job with her brief role that we see her in. And she perfectly, perfectly fits into that 1930s time period. I mean, she was made for that. So I thought she did good and I wanted to point that out.
Yeah, I think the standout performances for me were definitely Christian Bale. I think he's just on another level in this movie compared to everybody else. Obviously, he's playing the lead, so he has the most screen time. But his performance, I think, is outstanding in this. Margot was really good. I also really liked the performances of Anya Taylor-Joy and Rami Malek. And I really liked the duo of Michael Shannon and Mike Myers together. I thought that was a very good pairing.
Yes. And Mike Myers is one of those people that I think back in like SNL days, maybe wasn't, or when he played Austin Powers, maybe kind of seemed like he could only play a certain kind of role or whatever, but he is quite an actor. I do think SNL showed a lot of his range as well, but he was hysterical in this role. I really liked his character. And it was, I don't know who he looked like to me with the blonde hair and the blue eyes and all that. Like, they clearly did a lot of different makeup and wig work and stuff with him. But he reminded me of someone. But he was great in that role.
Yeah, him and Shannon were very funny together as that little duo. So another like for this movie is it's set in a great time period. Locations are really good. I was wondering, though, I mean, obviously the budget for this movie is probably all going to the cast, because while they are in different locations, none of them are like insanely extravagant, except for that dinner party thing at the end. Everything else besides that is kind of like smaller settings or a house or something like that. So it was really, as I was watching this, I was like, man, where did all the budget for this go? And obviously it went to the cast, because while there are cool locations in this, it's not like we're, it's not like it's a James Bond movie or a Mission Impossible movie where we're going to like seven different countries throughout the course of the film and seeing these huge expansive landscapes. But what they do well is, you know, making it feel like that time period for sure.
Yes, the time period, I'm obsessed with that time period. And I also liked it because I know we've talked before, there is an abundance of movies and books about World War II. We hear about World War II, I think, more than anything, definitely more than Civil War, Revolutionary War, any other war, French and Indian War. But I thought this was interesting because it kind of shows a little bit of World War One, and it shows the time period in between the two wars going into World War Two. So I thought that was interesting. And even the 1930s, I don't think we get a lot of. We get Gatsby and stuff in the 20s, and we get a lot of things about the 40s because of the war and coming out of the war. But I feel like the 1930s is just unusual, and I liked that. And then the only thing I was sad about with the location, Jared, was Amsterdam itself. I was so excited because having just been there, I kept thinking, oh, they're going to show, like, I'm going to see something I recognized, or I walked there. And then I kept remembering, oh, well, this is supposed to be the 1930s. It's not going to look like 2022 Amsterdam. But I thought they did a great job with the limited sets and design and everything. And I thought they just did an excellent job with everything looking period, like 1930s and 1918. I know they showed that for a little bit, but I do think they did a really good job with the everything fit in the time period it was supposed to be in.
And then along with that, obviously the costumes are very impressive for this movie. Everybody is decked out to the nines, especially you really notice it when near the end of the movie, when all the characters kind of come together and are in a scene together, everybody's donning different apparel, different costumes, dresses, etc. Really fitting that time period very well.
But the wardrobe was exceptional. Whoever was in charge of that, I would be fine with them getting a nomination for something. And the hair, I cannot get over Margot Robbie's hair and how good she looked in that. I know part of that is attributed to how beautiful she naturally is, but they just did a great job again with it looking very period.
Any other likes before we move on to dislikes?
That's it. It's a short list.
Okay. On to dislikes. I mentioned performances that I didn't love in this movie. The three that I thought were not fantastic in this movie were actually John David Washington, Robert De Niro, and Chris Rock. I really did not like any of their performances. I thought John David Washington was very stiff in his performance, and obviously, like, you will get a role like Black Klansman, he's very expressive, or even Tenet, and I thought in this movie he just wasn't kind of up to the same level as Margot Robbie and Christian Bale, and wasn't it seemed like that was supposed to be a very fun friend group together. And I got that from Christian Bale and Margot Robbie, but not as much from John David Washington. So I just thought his stilted performance in this wasn't fantastic. I didn't love the De Niro character. I didn't really love the way he acted that character. I just thought it was kind of like any other character we've seen him play. Like, there wasn't a lot of range there for De Niro.
Right.
And then Chris Rock, I don't know why Chris Rock felt the need to shout every line he had in this movie, even in scenes where that was not necessary.
That's the one that stood out to me that I was like, well, if I had to pick one, Chris Rock, I think I haven't seen the season of Fargo, but everybody raved about him in that season. I have it on my watch list. And Chris Rock, you know, it's even weird to see him now because I feel like it's going to be a long time before we think about the slap when we see him, even though this would have been filmed prior to that and all that. But Chris Rock, I also thought the screaming was annoying. And that's very Chris Rock. That is part of his shtick, is that he yells everything and swears all the time. And I thought, well, you're supposed to be playing a character and the character is not Chris Rock. I also agree with you about John David Washington. I didn't think it was bad, but he just wasn't up to snuff with the other two. And stilted, I think a stilted performance is a really good explanation, Jared, or description of his performance. And then I didn't have an issue with Rami, but Arjun didn't like Rami's performance. And I will say, I think Rami is a fantastic actor. He hasn't done a poor job yet, but I did think this performance reminded me a lot of his character in No Time to Die. Like, it seemed like he was kind of playing that same role. So I didn't see a lot of range as far as his last few performances. So I would kind of say Rami was a little bit not my favorite too.
Okay. Yeah. I liked his performance in this, but, you know, like you said, now that you mentioned that James Bond thing, it was kind of similar to him playing the villain in that. So, yeah. Another dislike, obviously we've already talked about David O. Russell. He sucks as a human being. That's, you know, we can't really separate. They say, you know, try to separate the off-screen stuff from on-screen, but it's very difficult in this situation. So obviously, like, David O. Russell is not a good person. We've addressed that here on the show. The biggest problem, I think, with this movie is the plot is freaking all over the place. This script is like going 84 different directions and it can't figure out what it wants to do. Does it want to be a friendship movie that's kind of like a buddy cop comedy? Does it want to be a murder mystery movie? Does it want to be a political thriller? Like, it's like it has no idea what it wants to do.
Yeah, I don't know what was going on here. I still don't. I think that's really bad. Like, when you leave a movie and you're like, I don't even know how to describe what I saw. And also, it didn't move me in either direction. I didn't hate it, but I definitely didn't love it. That's just a bad sign to me. And if someone asked me to describe the plot, I'd be like, I have no idea. And I still have no idea. Yeah. So that's a really bad sign.
Yeah, and then at the end, I'm just like sitting there like, okay. Like, it ends and they're just like, Amsterdam. Amsterdam. Yeah. And then the credits roll and you're like, okay, well, I don't know what I just saw, but it was acted well. Costumes were cool, but I have no idea what that movie was about. And like you said, if I was trying to explain this to somebody, I have no idea how to like sum it up to like let them know what it was. And I think that even comes through in the trailers. Like, whoever made the trailer was like, I don't really know how to make a trailer for this movie because it's kind of all over the place. So another dislike was this movie, they're like, this was based on a true story, I guess, or somewhat semi-based on a true story, which is like a David O. Russell thing. He likes to do that where it's like part of it is true story and then like other parts are added for dramatic effect. But this was hard to tell if it was like historical or not. It didn't really address the true story part of it that much, if it was a true story.
And I think the disappointment for me and confusion was the historical element wasn't really introduced until literally halfway through the film. They brought up, something about like Hitler and World War II and someone becoming radical. Like, they're basically saying there's some guy who wants to kill a bunch of people. They're describing Hitler. But I also thought, what? Like, leading for the first hour and a half of this movie, there was no mention of this. And I thought, okay, so now this is like based on a true story kind of, and it's about World War II. I had no idea. And yeah, I feel like the plot was all over the place and I still don't know if it was historical. And I also don't know what was true. Mm-hmm. So if he was trying to get across like, hey, this is a story based on something that happened in the past, I have no idea what was that event and what was fiction versus fact.
Another dislike is Christian Bale plays a doctor in this movie who has like ailments, potions, etc. They show a lot of like he has a fake eye, so he has a glass eye because he lost an eye young in his life. So they show him numerous times like putting the eye in, the eye falls out at one point, he's got to like pop it back in there. And then they show a lot of stuff with like needles and stuff. Personally, I didn't, you know, like you really need that in this movie. Mm-hmm. I thought sometimes the eye thing was used for comedic effect, which was kind of funny at times. But like, I don't need to see him like pop his glass eye back in 18 times. So like, I get it. He has a glass eye. Like you've gotten that plot point across. Okay. Let's move on to like something else. Is there anything else unique about his character or just that he has a glass eye? Like,
yeah. And this isn't, I would like to blame David O. Russell for things, but this isn't his fault, but he picked the things that were graphic are the things that actually do really make me nauseous, which is things with eyes and needles. I don't mind needles. That's not the problem. It's like seeing it penetrate someone's skin or a vein. I want to throw up. Like I want to throw up just saying that out loud. And there was a lot of that. And then again, I don't mind like gore and violence as much as a lot of people do, but they showed a lot of wounds and stuff from World War One. When we see Christian Bale and John David Washington fighting in World War One, they get injured. There's a lot of shrapnel. Margot Robbie's a nurse, so she like removes it, but they showed so much of it. They showed close-ups of their wounds. They showed things like skin peeling off of their face, her taking the shrapnel out. And I just thought, I don't need, you know, 10 minutes of this. I get it. And the eye thing, I agree with you, Jared. I could have seen him lose his eye and pick up his eye and dust it off and pop it back in one time. I got the point. But we saw it so many times. I was like, this is gross. This is making me nauseous.
And then there was that early in the movie, that autopsy scene as well, where they like cut that body open and you see all of that as well.
Yes. So, yeah. The stomach.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Bit much.
Well, I think that's wrapped up all of our dislikes. So we'll move on to our scores now. And I don't know who's supposed to go first this week.
I think it's me.
Okay.
And I've already decided I don't feel great about this score. But I looked at what I gave Don't Look Up, which is my least favorite movie of this year, because I didn't see it till this year. So I gave it 1 point higher than that. But I can't believe I gave Don't Look Up something in the 60s. Like, I just can't get over that now. But whatever. We live with regret. I'm giving Amsterdam 69. It wasn't abysmal. I don't know if 69 is even a fair score, but it wasn't the worst thing I've seen. But I do think it's really bad when you leave a film and you can't describe the plot and it was just mediocre. Like, I didn't feel good or bad about it. I just felt like I kind of wasted some time. So 69 for me.
I've kind of got the same thoughts as you. It was a very middle of the road movie. I probably will never watch it again.
I won't.
Like, again, you can't explain what it's about. Great performances. Really cool to see. Like, as two people that really enjoy Hollywood and actors and things of that nature, it was cool to see all these people in this movie together. But I don't know if the average person would really enjoy that as much as like you and I did. So, I'm going to give it a 57 out of 100. Very middle of the road. Not the worst movie I've seen this year. Not the best. And I forget which company released this, but I think they had pretty high hopes. They thought it was going to be like an Oscar contender. And then once they saw it, they were like, oh, this is not very good. So, and the other reason I knew this wasn't good is because Taylor Swift posted absolutely nothing about it on her social media. So,
oh my gosh, you're right. Wow.
Like, I think maybe she posted the trailer when the trailer came out, but once the movie came out, there was nothing on her, like, go see Amsterdam or go check out my role in Amsterdam or anything like that. So I was like,
I didn't even think of that. Wow. That's bad.
That's all of our thoughts on Amsterdam. You can follow the show on social media at Podcast Silver on Twitter and Instagram. Search the Silver Screen Podcast on Facebook and find us there. Be sure to rate and review wherever you listen. And then you can find our Letterboxd profiles in the show description as well if you want to follow us on Letterboxd. Our next episode, we're kind of going to get you set up for what we call like awards movie season, or the fall, early winter movie season, where all the heavy hitters come out. We've got a lot of big movies that are set to release here in the next couple months, and then even in the next couple weeks, like Tar, The Menu, The Fablemans,
Wakanda Forever,
Black Panther, Wakanda Forever, Babylon. all of these big, big, big movies. And you may be listening and thinking, wait, what are these about? Who are in them? What is the, you know, are they contenders in certain categories? So we're going to try to run those down for you next week so that you can maybe pick out a couple that you're really interested in seeing. And then that way you kind of have a good idea going into award season, what maybe some of the heavy hitters are, what some things you should see when they come out in theaters near you, stuff like that. So that'll be our next episode.
I'm really excited about it, Jared. There's so many movies I'm looking forward to.
Same here.
Until next time, we'd like to thank the Academy.